Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about an update on Illinois 3 months into adult use legalization, and we are joined by counsel to the Hoban Law Group and co-host of the Deadhead Cannabis Show, Larry Mishkin. Larry, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Everything is fine here in Chicago. We're still sheltering in place, but the weather's been nice enough to be able to get out and walk around the block a few times. So nothing to complain about. How's everything in Denver?
We're doing good. We are social distancing, quarantining, and you know, last night we had a number of people participating in a moon howl. So we've seen different things around the world. Ways that people are celebrating healthcare workers. That was a little strange thing that happened here in Denver last night, but we're doing good.
Okay.
So, you know, Eric, that's been happening in Evergreen, where I live, for the last week. And I was out, it had to have been last Wednesday night. I was in my garage working on something or other, and I started to hear the yips and the howls. There are coyotes in my neck of the woods, and I thought, well, I haven't heard anything like this in a long time. So I went in and I said, you got to hear this. And anyway, that explains it. And it seems like it's catching on in other places. That's good to hear.
So that's fun. Okay, I'll have to be listening out my window and see what I can hear. Okay, Illinois, you never know.
You never know. So Larry, it's been right. 3 months since the legalization of recreational or adult use marijuana in the Prairie State. Tell us how it's gone. What are the obstacles you're facing? How's it all looking?
Well, the short answer is looking great. And it's looking great both financially, and it's looking great in terms of operation. As of yesterday, I went online and checked and confirmed that it was 53 adult use dispensaries operating in the state right now. They have done combined over $100 million in business in 2020. Now, understanding that this is in a system where they're constantly running out of product, they have lines around the block. A lot of the municipalities have opted out, so there's only certain locations where they can even have these dispensaries. And they've done over $100 million worth of business. So everybody is ecstatic about that. And, you know, it's been a great thing. And once we get the rest of adult use dispensaries and a few more craft grows online, as a result of the most recent round of licensing work that's going on, that will make it even better, I think, and even stronger. But this coronavirus has not slowed down the rate of sale. In fact, if anything, they've seen an uptick as people stock up to shelter in place. And then in a move that's really quite telling, I think, to demonstrate just how far Illinois has come in such a short period of time, really from kind of going like being almost the pariah of the cannabis industry. Nobody really wanted to talk to me about Illinois because nothing was happening here. And now not only is everything happening here, but our brand new governor, who's very much in favor of all of this, came out and said that the marijuana was a essential business and has authorized curbside sales. Now, this is in a state like when we were going around and lecturing our clients on what you have to do to be compliant, the idea that a marijuana dispensary employee could carry marijuana outside the door and give it to somebody sitting in a car on a curb in front of the store is, you know, couldn't have imagined it in a million years. And in a relatively short time, Governor Pritzker added that provision, and now there's a lot of talk that perhaps he's going to go straight to home delivery, which would be another amazing thing for us in terms of ratcheting up business. So we're very, very excited. The round of applications for the additional adult use dispensaries closed on January 2nd, and those are supposed to be announced on May 1st. And then on April 30th, we'll hit the deadline for applications for craft grows, which are defined as 5,000 square feet of canopy space or less, processing licenses and transportation licenses. These applications were all due on March 16th. Governor Pritzker extended it to March 30th, and now it's been extended to April 30th. I'm sure due in large part to the virus and the impact that it's had on people being able to get business done. But I'm very busy. All the other attorneys I know that are doing this work right now are busy. So it looks like it's good for everyone, and we're very excited about it.
Well, Larry, let me talk about your governor for a minute, because this is an interesting case study. A, he's certainly tangled with our president on this this COVID scenario, and has exhibited a lot of leadership, seemingly in that way, at least from an outsider. So I'd love to hear your perspective on how that's perceived within Illinois. But also, you know, when you look at a governor that comes on, especially a new governor that comes on, is able to effectuate the idea that cannabis is a business that should be commercialized and expanded. We saw that in New Jersey, with New Jersey's present governor coming in, promising within the first 100 days he was going to be in office that things were going to change there, and that ran into political roadblocks, perhaps because of his leadership style and the fact that he didn't have a lot of political capital. So it's not exactly apples to apples. But can you talk about Pritzker's leadership here and just the fact that he's embraced this and was able to get things done in a state with such a funky political pattern and path?
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. You know, the short answer to it is, you know, you got to go read a collection of Mike Royko columns to truly understand the psyche of the Illinois lawmakers, which is something that's a whole political science class in and of itself. But Pritzker has really been wonderful in terms of all of this. Certainly on the coronavirus, I, you know, can say that Illinois, which I don't think anybody's surprised, is at least the part of Illinois that I live in, is not a particularly big Trump-supporting area, and people have been very pleased with the way that Pritzker has really spoken his mind and stood up for the people of Illinois in terms of making sure that we're covered and protected, and doing all of that. So we're very, very happy about that. On the cannabis front, he's been a huge supporter of it and ran that as part of his platform and was running advertisements showing how his projections for what type of adult use revenue they could generate, both in terms of licensing fees and in terms of excise taxes and everything else. And it was part of his budget that he submitted as part of his campaign. And after he was elected, he immediately came out and said, "This is it. We're going to put this in play right away. It's something that should have been done a long time ago." He immediately expanded access to the medical program. And now we thought on the medical program that maybe had peaked at about 40 to 45,000 patients after four full years of open enrollment, and now it's well over 100,000 people. I think part of that, of course, is because people figured out that you don't have to pay the excise tax if you go that route. But nevertheless, Pritzker opened it up and made it more accessible to people in terms of qualifying conditions and everything. So as far as we're concerned, he's been a huge fan of the cannabis industry. And, you know, I like to think that part of it is because, you know, he's a businessman. And he comes from a family with a strong business background and a lot of financial success. And look, on my podcast that I do with Jim Marty from Bridge West, we have a great time talking about all the things we agree about. And we agree to disagree on a lot of political issues from time to time. But nevertheless, we were talking about Pritzker, and even he has something nice to say about him. And, you know, I think it's just that you find somebody who's willing to stand up and talk about what they believe in. And look, you know, Bob, you and I have had this conversation. I'm certainly not smart enough, you know, to know which half of America is right, other than to know that, you know, 50-50 is my mantra. And but I really do like J.B. Pritzker, and I think that he stepped in and he really pushed the buttons that needed to be pushed in Illinois to get this accomplished. I think he sold legislators on the idea that it not only was good for, you know, overall revenue, but it was good for generating tourism. It was good for business. It would be good for revitalizing parts of all different parts of the state. And I think the real reason why they achieved success in Illinois, and the one thing that Pritzker really put himself behind, which proved to be crucial, is the social equity component of the program. And that's where they gathered the support of the leaders from the Black Caucus and from various minority groups who traditionally have not been very keen on the idea of legal cannabis, because because they see it as an idea that passes them right by while taking advantage of their neighborhoods and things like that. And everyone was quick to point out that in Illinois' medical program, there's not a single minority owner, or at least not majority minority owner of any of the dispensaries or cultivation centers, including the ones that are located on the south side of the city. So the social equity program is designed, and it's interesting because social equity is not defined based on race or even on income. It's defined based on your experiences with the law, with the government on marijuana. So either you live or reside in a disproportionately impacted area, meaning it's an area that the marijuana enforcement has been disproportionate to everywhere else, or you can be a victim of the war on drugs. All you have to do is been arrested for a misdemeanor or a class 4 felony or lower, so nothing about that. As long as there's no violence and there was no sales to minors involved, you can get it expunged, but at the same time, you can use it to go forward as a social equity applicant in Illinois. And the idea is that this is a give back to people who have been negatively affected by the war on drugs, and you know they should have an opportunity to now be in a position to prosper from it, if you will. And the law says that you can use a social equity applicant on your application. If you do, you get 50 points, but that's out of 250 points, so that's pretty significant. But they have to own 51% of the company, so you can't just do it and have a minority face or a social equity face at the head of your company. You have to submit your operating agreement and show that this person owns 51% or more and that they actually have control of the company. And that's caused a little bit of consternation for folks here who aren't necessarily keen on giving up control of a business to somebody who they may not know or who they may not have the requisite business background. But for the most part, the people that I've worked with have been very open to finding ways to accommodate the law and at the same time push the business forward. And so I'll give Pritzker credit for that, because not only did he find a way to get everyone in the state to get on board with it, which in Illinois is not an easy thing to do, but he's done it in a way where if the program is successful, then people who are from these impacted neighborhoods and who have been victims of the war on drugs themselves should now be able to find a way to benefit from it and profit from it. And so we're very excited about that and happy that he was able to pull that together and put a program in place that's going forward. Some people would argue it's not perfect, and excuse me, I don't disagree with that. But as you and I have talked about, Bob, it's always better to have a law on the books that allows adult use, even if it's not perfect and you're going to argue over it, as opposed to not having any law at all and arguing about what it might be. So overall, it's done very well for us, and we're very satisfied.
Well, it seems like there's also recently, to your point, everybody's been working on applications, yourself included, within the great state of Illinois, for dispensary licensing of some sort, or at least cultivation vertical licensing in that regard. What was the reason for the extension of those deadlines? Did that have to do with COVID? Was that a processing thing, or was that in the works before our shelter-in-place orders and the economy slowed down?
Absolutely. And the short answer is that nobody really knows 100% for sure, because the announcements that have come out have been more along the general lines that Governor Pritzker today signed the executive order or whatever, extending the filing deadline to this date. You'll now file by this date at this time. And the one factor that they put in there that led us to believe that it was COVID-related is that in the past, the filing procedure was that you had to take your application on a thumb drive, stick it in an envelope, and take it to the post office and have it sent by certified mail, return receipt requested. And there was concerns that, you were going to have to go and file it downtown and wait in line at the Department of Agriculture. And when they had the filing at the beginning of January for the dispensaries at the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, the line was so big that if you got in line at 9 o'clock in the morning, you were lucky if you were done by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. There was just hundreds and hundreds of people all gathered together, and they wanted to avoid that. So So now he switched it to you have to take it to the post office and send it by certified mail, return receipt requested. And I laughed, and you might appreciate this, Bob. I said, does that include the standard 3x5 card? But apparently not. But nevertheless, he then extended it on March 30th. And although he didn't say specifically again, I'd like to think that he extended it because he didn't want everybody on that Monday going down to their post office and all waiting in line back to back to send by certified mail. Everything else, as you know, can really be done electronically at this point. There's not a whole lot of in-person stuff that's required either on my end or typically from my client's end other than maybe going out and looking at a piece of property. So the process has been rolling right along. And, you know, from a lawyer's perspective, hey, you know, if there's more time, that's good. You can get a chance to catch your breath. And by the same token, just signed up 2 new clients who just saw that there was months for months to get involved. Thought, why not? Let's give it a try. So, hey, I can't complain.
Well, and I have a question really for both of you guys. As you noted, Larry, you know, Illinois was the first state to pass this measure through legislation rather than the ballot measure initiatives that we've seen elsewhere. And as you raise this point that there is probably an aspect of the social equity that was included in there that probably got that further along. You know, maybe start with you, Bob. Do you see legislation driving legalization more and more, especially given the success we're seeing in Illinois?
So the social equity programs have been a major driver, particularly in large cities, right? When you look at state-level programs, the state-level programs have largely been initiated by ballot measures, not necessarily by the states. And then when they're implemented, the states will take feedback and initiate with those social equity programs, which has really pushed legalization over the hump. It goes in line with an organization that we work with, the Last Prisoner Project. It goes in line with just a bunch of social justice elements. But certainly it's initiatives like that and the evolving concept of what legalized cannabis should be that's helping shape and getting additional buy-in from other folks. In fact, I have to tell you, think about Denver. There's a particular neighborhood in Denver that was opposed to marijuana legalization from the very, very get-go, and I don't know where they are on things today, but because it would, in fact, not create...
We lost Bob. So let's do this.
I wasn't sure who was me or Bob.
So why don't we do this since we lost him? Can I put that same question to you, and we'll just do it that way.
Yeah, just go ahead and ask me the question again if you would. I'll be happy to answer it.
You got it. So Larry, you know, we have to note that Illinois was the first state to pass this adult use legalization through legislation. And, you know, in other states like Colorado, California, this has all come from ballot measure initiatives. Do you think, given the success we're seeing in Illinois, other states will start to legalize through legislation?
You know, that's a great question. And I think that this is an issue that doesn't really get enough focus. All people focus on the fact is that Illinois now has adult use. But the fact that we did it through the legislature is huge, because marijuana, although wildly popular among the population, when I say wildly popular, it's close to 60% now of the American public in polls that they take who support legalized marijuana, we still have it on Schedule 1. And the reason we have it on Schedule 1, in my opinion, is because we haven't had a president yet who's willing to spend the political capital necessary to take it off the schedule and to make it legal. And I think that, you know, in that regard, for a lot of politicians, it becomes a third rail where very few of them want to venture. And so the ballot initiatives make the legislators' jobs a lot more easier, because now they've voted it in. It's just our job to, you know, make some rules to make it work. But in Illinois, which, you know, can be very, very interesting, as I said earlier, in terms of how policy gets made, both medical and adult use were brought in through legislative action, which you know, actually required a lot of these, all of them, to all of the legislators to go on the record and to make a vote as to whether they were for it or against it. And for years, the medical efforts had largely failed, but through the actions of one of the state legislators from my home district here in Skokie, actually a gentleman named Lou Lang, who was one of the leaders of the House for a number of years before he retired a few years ago and now works in the industry with various groups. He was instrumental in making this happen. And, you know, I'm sure that there's all sorts of good stories about, you know, good old-fashioned arm twisting and Illinois bargaining and whatever needed to be done to get it done. But somehow he got the medical pass. And that, to me, was more surprising because we went from zero to medical. And not just medical, but a medical state where the dispensary could sell the full array of products, from flower to extract to everything, instead of one of these vape-only types of states. And only by the fluke of the fact that we elected a Republican governor as part of the Trump revolution, if you will, a few years ago, we wound up with a guy who came in and inherited a program he wanted nothing to do with. And then we now have our governor in place who supports the program. But yeah, I think it's tremendous that the legislature did it. And, you know, to further answer your question, sure, there's going to be states out there that are going to say, look, we have a financial issues too. We know that people in the state smoke, right? And that's the line that I always use. For the legislators who think that their vote makes a difference, the only thing it makes a difference on is whether or not you're getting a piece of the action that already exists and that we know already exists. It's not even a mystery. The money's just here waiting for the government to decide it wants a piece of it. And now that a state like Illinois has, in fact, you know, been the leader in its legislators voting for it, I'm hopeful that legislators in other states are going to do that as well and help kind of, if you will, expedite the process of getting adult use in as many states as possible.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And Larry, I have to ask you while we have you. So last month, Bob Weir was supposed to play a concert at the Chicago Theater. I feel like you probably had tickets. Of course, that show had to be postponed due to COVID. Mm-hmm. What are we to do? What are the deadheads of the world? How do we how can we make it through this time without live music and without potentially Dead & Co. company's shows getting postponed?
So you know that's a fun question too. And here's my answer. You know, really, Deadheads and Fishheads and really any jam band fans, we're the best suited for this of all time, because you know your average Deadhead has listened to five times as much Dead music, live Dead music, on their cassette tapes or on their CDs driving around the country and you know cleaning their house. Whenever you listen to music, right, than you actually ever really spend in the concerts themselves. People sit out in the parking lot all day before the concert starts listening to live music. We go into the concert for 4 hours, come back out, sit in the parking lot, and listen to more live music. So it's kind of ingrained in us that, you know, when you're listening to the Dead, there's, as long as you have access to live Dead, and nowadays, you know, you've got this app, Re-Listen, or whatever it's called, where my kids tell me about it. I've tried to get on it, and, you know, you can go to any concert by any group. But all the Dead shows, as far as I can tell, are a huge number of them, are available now. You can pick out any show you want, and you can just sit down and listen to it. I'm one of those guys who, you know, sees it being sold by the Grateful Dead and has to buy it because I like the pretty packaging and all of that kind of stuff. And so what my son and I did was we sat down and realized that there's a combination of all of the various lives that I've collected over the years. I've got a lot of the days of the calendar year covered. So now what we're doing here is we're just, whatever the day is, I go find one of my live shows that lines up with the date and pop it on. And the beauty for me right now is that yesterday, was April 7th, was the first day of Europe 72. A few years ago, they came out with a box set of the entire tour, which I bought myself as a birthday present, much to my wife's chagrin. But it's wonderful to have. So for about the next 45 days, I'm covered for the entire Europe 72 tour to listen to as we go marching through. Not the same to be in there, I confess, but it's kind of the next best thing to be in there. And for a group of fans, you know, who've kind of gotten used to the fact that Jerry's not here anymore, you know, we're always going to hear the best Dead cover band around. You know, you do what you do. But you know, when you have the tickets and the show gets canceled, that's the worst of all. In 1985 or 86, the Dead were set to come to St. Louis for the first time since I had started seeing them. And not only were they going to come to St. Louis, but they were going to play at the Fox Theater, which was an old theater where they had played, you know, as far as we were concerned, ages ago, although it was only the late 60s, early 70s, and would play historic 4 or 5 hour shows there. And they were going to come back to do 2 shows. And we all reached out and got tickets, and we all had great seats. And my parents were out of town, and my college friends were all coming in, and we were going to have a big party. And Jerry had went into this diabetic coma, and the shows were all canceled, and nobody knew what to do. Now, obviously, we were also very worried about Jerry, who luckily pulled through and labored on for another 10 years. But, you know, even at the time, once we kind of accepted the fact that, you know, hopefully Jerry will be better, like, how can this be? You know, I've been waiting to see these shows. Yeah, Bob Weir and Wolf Brothers, I saw them last time around, and we're going to see them again. And Chicago Theater is a great place to see a concert. So it sucks, but I'll, you know, just come home and throw in some Live Dead and have a good time anyway.
So a long, strange trip, Larry. Well, we're grateful for all of the recorded live shows. We're grateful to have you on the podcast. Can't wait to have you on again. You stay safe out there, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being on the show, and anytime, I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. Stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.